Hello there, this is Mark Bauerlein for another conversation. I'm in Dallas today with Claudia McMillan, who is the founding director of the Louise and Donald Cowan Center for Education, which is part of the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture. Welcome.
Thank you.
Claudia.
Welcome to you. We're so glad you braved the rain and came on.
Well, it's great to be here and to see what you're doing. It's inspirational for us. So why don't you just tell us, what are you doing?
We are carrying out the vision of that Donald and Louise Cowan had. They were two of the founders of the Dallas Institute. They were at the University of Dallas and pretty much founded the University of Dallas in its current iteration. And he was president, she was literature department chair. They came to the Institute and shifted their focus to primary and secondary education in the early 80s. And the work they began, Dr. Louise Cowan began in the summer of 1984 with the National Endowment for the Humanities grant. Two summer cycle of classes based on her literary genre theory.
Thank you, NEH.
Yes, thank you. They seeded this program, and from what I understood from Bill Rice, whom I visited years ago and still sorry about the loss of him, ours is the only center that's grown out of an NEH seeded summer seminar class, which is exciting. But I was fortunate enough, blessed enough. I have no idea how I merited the introduction, but I was delivered here by a new friend, in the summer of 1989 as a broken school teacher, ready to get out of the profession.
Broken by what?
Emotionally, just intellectually, I realized that what I was doing wasn't excellent. It didn't have real quality to it. I loved my students, but I hadn't had the education that I really needed to be a good high school teacher.
Were you an English teacher?
I was an English teacher. But I walked into this place, and in the first moment of the orientation in May of 1989, Louise Cowan changed my life. She leaned over the podium and said to us, the room full of about 60 school teachers, "You are the guardians of the culture." I had never heard anyone say anything to me. It was a clarion call. It was my heart's desire. It spoke to what I always believed was true about the teaching profession.
You are the guardians of the culture.
You are the guardians.
You're the stewards.
Yes.
Of this tradition.
And
that's right.
It comes at great price, but it also brings you who you are. And this is what I've realized in these 30 years that I've been working with this vision, and then have been fortunate, blessed again to come and work here as the overseer of the programs that changed my life.
And that outlook just wasn't in the public schools.
Well, I was actually a private school teacher. My whole career has been in private school education. I attended private high school the last couple of years of my own education, but no, I was in a very mediocre private school.
Yep.
You know, most schools are average. There are some really good, and then there are a few exceptional. I was not in very good schools, mm-hmm. and they didn't have academic excellence or any kind of expectation for us teachers to grow and learn. And this place gave me permission to fall in love with my discipline and to share that love with my students.
And it foregrounds the culture. It foregrounds the materials,
yes.
The inheritance,
yes.
You know, the great works.
Absolutely.
That's what counts.
It's all about works worthy of your whole life, which is what we learned. And so for 35 years, this program has been going on here. I wouldn't say these exaggerated things. They're not really exaggerations, but they sound like hyperbole. I wouldn't say these things if not for the fact that most of us who go through the Summer Institute say the same thing. This has changed the course of my life. This has changed the direction of my life. So out of this summer seminar that began in 84, different programs grew out of it, feeding the need in the primarily in the public school system, though we do have a good mixture of private and public teachers each summer.
So would this count in public school terms? This is professional development?
This is PD,
summer professional
yes,
development.
Yes, and we're certified through the state to give continuing professional education the certain number of hours that teachers need to accrue. But what I realized when I came here to work in 2004, after having gone back into the classroom and then doing my graduate work, my doctoral work at the University of Dallas, I came here to teach and to lead the programs, like I said, that had changed my life. It's still kind of unimaginable to me. I can't believe how this has happened still.
So what you teach them is what you teach them is pedagogy, classroom management skills, reading comprehension strategies,
not a bit.
Test preparation, and
not a bit. this is the teacher's dream. I had a pre-kindergarten teacher. She's one of my favorite people, and she's a public school Dallas ISD pre-kindergarten teacher about 10 years ago who was in her Summer Institute classes. And each summer, the director, and now I am the director, so I do what Dr. Louise did before. We meet with each of the participants for about 10 minutes, just to get to know them a little, talk a little bit. And I remember talking to her second summer and asking her the standard question for those who were returning for their second summer: did this have any impact on your class this year? And I remember thinking, well, this is not, because she teaches four-year-olds, and so that simply doesn't have any bearing. And she said, it changed everything. And I can remember stopping and looking up and saying, what do you mean? How could a graduate-level multidisciplinary literature class,
where you're reading,
have,
you know, the classics,
all of the,
and
everything, yeah, from Homer up to Melville, how could it possibly? And she said, one of the best things I've ever heard. And she doesn't know this, I've told her, but she couldn't possibly know how much this has fueled me in difficult times. She said to me, I wanted to make my kids feel the way that you all made me feel about learning, and I knew how. Because the classes are, and really all of our classes, they're not about pedagogy, they're about content, primarily in the humanities and primarily literature. Because the Cowans, especially Dr. Donald Cowan, ironically the physicist, said that the cultivation of the poetic imagination, first through great literature, so that you could understand form and inherent qualities that bind things together. That was the foundation of liberal education.
You know, I'm going to ask about that. We'll talk about the poetic imagination. But in terms of the material, you said the content, I'm looking at some of the curricular materials that you present. You have a unit on the Epic of Gilgamesh, the Analects of Confucius, the Book of Genesis, and Hesiod's Theogony in one. You do the Odyssey in another, and Julius Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, Ovid's Metamorphoses, the Gospel of Luke, the Acts, the Book of Acts. This is an extraordinary reading list, and the teachers must love getting into presentations about this stuff without doing theories of learning and styles of different learning styles and all of those sort of peripheral elements of being a teacher and losing the core.
Yes.
Right? The core material.
Yes. And this is what you're just reading is coming from the curriculum architecture for the Cowan Center's ninth grade history English curriculum. It's an integrated class, and if you are a Cowan Academy, which is an educational model that the Dallas Institute's Cowan Center has patented, as well as the Cowan School, those two educational models, if you are a Cowan Academy in the humanities and you want to license our curriculum, then we can support you in your development, your own re-education to be able to teach essentially, well, it's simply a high quality liberal education.
Right.
And we're doing this and the students are eating it up. A couple of my colleagues in the Dallas school have said this year in our meetings, I didn't think that they were going to be able to relate to this material. And one in particular said, you know, I fought you on this last year when we were talking about doing this Cowan Academy next fall. And I thought they have, I told you, they have to do things that are relevant that they can relate to.
It's got to be more contemporary.
Yes.
It has to be, there has to be racial alignment between
yes.
their race and the race of authors, things
yes.
they read and so on. And?
Yes. And what they've realized and have told me just in these first 8 weeks of school is that the students have just eaten this up. They have completely embraced it. And they think Gilgamesh is theirs. They think Confucius is theirs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They think Yahweh, the Torah, the Genesis story is theirs. Because this is the way they've been taught this year in this public school. So we are very, very excited, grateful, and a little bit daunted.
How can anyone not think that you have the Gospel of Luke here? How can anyone not think that the Sermon on the Mount isn't everybody's? How that isn't coded for any particular
yes.
group.
As
I
all
mean,
great works
yes.
are not coded, and this is what the teachers are finding. The students, one of our teachers in the Dallas school said he realized that up to this point in his career, and I think he's been teaching about 15 years, that most of the activity has been out, and he motioned his hands out in front of him as if in kinetic activity, out physical motion. And he said, what I realized is that what's happening, where the activity is happening now, is in my kids' heads. I can see it happening. And he said, I know that doesn't make sense, but
mm-hmm.
I can see more activity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the students are, they're struggling. It's a difficult course.
That's
it's very
right.
demanding. But so many of them are already absolutely captivated by it and have started this, even this group of themselves in the ninth grade, the Cowan Academy students, because they're the only ones at that high school who have this curriculum.
Yeah.
And
I have to think that, you know, if you become a 10th, 11th grade English teacher, you didn't do that because you love critical thinking. You didn't do that because you want to instill empathy. Those are just these abstractions. You
yes.
did it. You did it because you had a great 11th grade English class,
right?
And you had a teacher turn you on to Jane Austen or Charles Dickens.
Yes.
And you want to give that to the students. You want them to have that experience, that immersion in the literary greats, because you got that. And so much of the training of teachers seems to turn away from the content itself. I actually was. Mm-hmm. I was with a group of people once, teachers in the arts, and the leader said, my favorite phrase is something I heard a teacher say, I don't teach art, I teach students.
Mm.
And to me, that is a fundamentally erroneous approach
yes.
to this. No, I teach the art. It's the art that matters, and I want the students to share in that knowledge.
Yes.
That tradition, and they're gonna love that. So going the child-centered, to me, I find that sentimental.
Yes.
And I also find it's very easy to lose your standards, your scruples, your sense of the content that really matters, the tradition. What you said, you're guardians of the culture. and that, that the culture is Dante.
It's
Chaucer,
yes,
which I see here on your list. It's Machiavelli. It's Henry the Fourth, Henry the Fifth. That's what counts. And so I'm not surprised the teachers get in there and they think, this is not the same kind of professional development seminar I've been in before.
Yes. And they all have the sensibility, because you cannot even begin to teach in a Cowan Academy until you've had at least one summer institute here. And what we do in that summer institute is give the teachers the immersive experience, learning experience of an experience of liberal learning, as right. Donald Cowan calls it, so that they understand the mood and the mode in which these things can be done.
So a Cowan Academy is like it's a curriculum that you have devised, and you will certify a school or a department within a school that commits to that curriculum.
Well, you can be, the three Cowan Academies that opened this fall are all three Cowan Academy and the Humanities candidate programs. But, you know, Donald Cowan was a physicist, mm-hmm. and he believed that the act of making, the making imagination coming from poiesis, was inherent in all the disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to the day where we can support a Cowan Academy in the sciences and mathematics.
Right.
That would please his please him no end.
Right.
And so what these schools have chosen is because we had this very successful integrated history English curriculum that we had used in a private school in Addison. A number of us who were alumni of the University of Dallas and also the Dallas Institute. And so they said they wanted what the kids in the rich schools got. They wanted what the rich kids got, and so they are licensing our curriculum for their humanities.
Mm-hmm.
And it is important because we do treat literature as literature here. It's not propaganda, it's not a handmaiden, it is itself the thing,
mm-hmm.
In the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could be a Cowan Academy, you could have a department of physical education teachers. Honestly, three of my favorite Summer Institute alumni have been physical education teachers.
Hmm.
And all three of them have said to me, this changed the way I began teaching in my PE.
Right.
And so the thing that we have realized is the genius of Louise Cowan's vision. She created the program back in 84 for high school English teachers. But she told me when I took over the reins in 2004 that she hadn't imagined that anybody else would be crazy enough to do all that reading, because the Summer Institute is a 3-week class, and in the epic summer you read more than 3,000 pages, and in the tragedy comedy summer you read about 2,000 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what teachers and administrators do for their vacation during the summer. But it certainly does equip you for the kind of mental paradigm,
mm-hmm.
Of not just rigor, because that word has been inflated lately, but the excellence, I think, is what Don Cowan would call it, that prepares and equips you to begin teaching in a course like this. So it just so happens that the Cowan Academies that are on the ground right now, all three are Cowan Academy in the Humanities candidate programs.
But look, these people who come here, they must be hungry.
Starving.
They're hungry. They're starving.
Starving.
They're not getting the food.
No.
And they eat it up.
Yes.
And I imagine, you know, I've been in meetings before in which, you know, if someone mentions a great work that, oh goodness, I haven't read that one. We all have gaps. Someone mentions that, I feel a little embarrassed, you know, I feel a little bad. If I read it, I feel good. And they come out of these summer programs, they've done a lot of reading.
Yes.
And it gives you confidence. You know, I tell my son, you know, Jack, my 13-year-old son who won't read enough, when you don't know things and you're in a room with people, it's not a good feeling. When you do know them, that's a good feeling. And
yes.
it builds the collegiality, right? Especially if you're all reading the same things.
Yes. And that's the absolute distinctive of the Cowan Academy, and it will be of a Cowan School for Liberal Arts and Sciences when we do that, when we're able to do that.
So you have set texts.
The
how standardized is the syllabus in these courses?
Well, if you want to use our curriculum, it is what it is.
Okay.
You don't have
okay.
to use our curriculum. But what you can't do if you're going to teach an English class, a literature class, or a history class.
All contemporary literature.
No. We start at the beginning. So their summer reading in ninth grade is the Epic of Gilgamesh.
It's kind of old, isn't it?
Yes. And this is the thing that the teachers are marveling at happening in their classes. As I said a moment ago, one teacher who said, we have to give them something that's relevant. And he said a few times this year in meetings, I didn't know that they would love this, that they would eat it up, that they would think it was their own. So they have, the students take this up and they don't know any better. In these three academy programs, this is the only way they've ever had this level, this grade taught to them.
Shakespeare's Julius Caesar isn't relevant. Let's see, it never happens in the modern world that kind of a scheming, maybe resentful guy is able to persuade a more principled man to do something that he really
yes.
shouldn't do. That never happens.
Yes.
Certainly never happens in high school.
All of the plot lines are actually more relevant to them than the works that are misguidedly written for them with the idea of relevance in mind.
Those are third-rate works. They're too, they have designs
yes.
on the young,
yes.
and that usually doesn't produce.
It's the liberation of this kind of curriculum that we are hoping will help the Cowan Center realize its vision. The Dallas Institute Cowan Center's vision is to help transform American public education so that every child can receive mm-hmm. a high-quality liberal education. And Don Cowan believed it could happen. Louise Cowan did as well, but he particularly believed it could happen, and he said it only needs to begin with a shift in attitude. And this is what we're seeing. I think that when we allow people to see these teachers and their students in these classes, they're going to see that what they are doing is good, even if they don't understand it, even if we're not using the same kinds of standardized things that they use in the other public school classes.
Well, I've got to think that when they look at a list here in your eighth grade history English course, you have a thematic focus on American myths. Myths here meaning sort of meaningful stories,
founding
ideas and images and so on. When they look and see this list of Emily Dickinson, Edgar Allan Poe, Hawthorne's short stories, Melville's Bartleby, and so on, they must think, this is the great stuff.
Yes.
This is the stuff that I read in college,
yeah.
and I can bring that down into eighth grade.
Yes.
And
yes.
it must be dignifying for them to select these. This is your expertise. It is not, you know, third-rate contemporary literature that somehow has some relevance for them. This must give them a feel of professionalism, really.
It does, and the teacher who is teaching that class in Fort Worth at our Cowan Academy in the middle school there has said that the students have responded so well. And I've been in that class, her classes, many times, and what Donald Cowan said, the curriculum is the key to the solution in any school. And I think he was talking primarily about the humanities here. He said it must be designed for the best, the most intellectually acute, but not in its complexity, but in its profundity and scope. And so he continues saying that means that the brightest students will be able to take material worthy of their consideration and they will be able to advance, and the less intellectually inclined students will be on the same plane of understanding. I had this happen in my own classes when I was teaching these integrated courses, and I was sitting in a seminar one time with them while we were reading the Odyssey, and there was one boy who was in the class who was one of the most brilliant students I've ever taught, one of those scary brilliant people at ninth grade. And across the seminar circle from him was this beautiful young girl who was not intellectually astute at all. And it wasn't because she was silly or anything. She just, well, none of us had the brain that he has, but she simply did not have that same capacity. And I remember sitting and listening to them and saying, Dr. Donald was right. They're talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He may be talking about it at a higher level, but she's talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that we have to do. One of our hearts, our desire for these programs is to cultivate real civic community. We're starting with the faculty. That's one of the distinguishing features of a Cowan Academy or a Cowan School faculty, is that they will be intellectual colleagues, not in competition with one another, not trying to outpace or to diminish one another, which is what the shadow side of the bureaucracy has set up all around the public school system. Everyone is in such fierce competition for the money that they don't have intellectual community. And we've given our children a terrible model of the way adults act around people that they don't have things in common in their
Indeed.
Sensibilities.
Indeed.
So this is designed also to help us as adults act like adults so that we can also show our students this is how grown-ups are.
Right, right. And you know, one thing about that division of the elite from the mediocre is that sort of the great books, classical education, as that was forming in the early 20th century, it was actually a progressive initiative. It wasn't an elite initiative. It was to say that the working classes, the lower middle classes, they deserve the best. They deserve exactly what the elite are getting. And this is one of the fundamental ideas of E.D. Hirsch with his cultural literacy idea, is that if you don't build cultural literacy among the disadvantaged, they don't have a prayer.
Yes.
Because without this liberal education, it's hard to take the SAT test. It's hard to go to the better schools and do well. It's hard to, you know, rise the income ladder if you don't have the acculturation that comes that they got and that you're not getting. And so it's one of the bizarre turnarounds in the history of education, the way in which these great books or liberal education, classical education, has been recast as some kind of class warfare.
Yes.
In the wrong way. It's
yes.
wrong.
Well, I'm just grateful for the courageous administrators in both the Dallas ISD and the Fort Worth ISD who have understood, and they've bypassed those political cultural wars and said, we want to give our kids in the public school as good of an education as they receive in the top tier private schools.
That's right.
And so they are so bold and so courageous and doing Herculean work to hold back the tide of the bureaucracy while we try to get this work seeded. And as a matter of fact, I have to say, these 14 years since I've been spending my time primarily in the public schools, working, trying to serve the public schools, I have met probably only a handful of people whom I would not call good. I don't know how to say that better. Everyone else, they may be what I think is terribly misguided, but they are good people. You don't give your life to education unless you have something good in you. Mm-hmm. And so this is what we're building on. People's desire to do the good, people's desire for excellence, and this 35 years here at the Dallas Institute alone of success with school teachers and now with administrators and teachers. Helping us achieve, as Donald Cowan says, the true form of one's life, so that we can share that with our students.
I think this is the future.
I hope so.
I think this to some old-fashioned looking curriculum with the deep reading in the classics is is the one with staying power. You know, educational fads come and go, and things like cultural relevance and so on, they rise and fall. These things, these are solid, and teachers love it. The students who encounter it love it. Where do you see this in 10 years? Final question.
I would like to see schools around the country, academies around the country. I am hoping that 1 year is enough time, though I didn't really understand the barriers that were going to be in front of these noble people in the public schools doing this, in the regular public schools. I really didn't understand. It's not that I wouldn't have done this, but 1 year, in a couple of years, if we can persevere past the struggles, I think that people will be able to look at these programs and say, huh, I didn't know that regular public school kids could do what the rich kids do in the best private schools.
I think that as you're sending out 40, 50 teachers every summer into different schools, different reaching a lot of students, it's going to get back to parents, that that we have good reason to be optimistic.
That's the way it feels.
Okay.
Always. Thank you.
Thank you, Claudia.
You are so welcome. Thank you. Thank you for this time.